Hello, my name is Paul Kearney. I'm Professor of Politics and Public Policy, and this is a series of short podcasts to accompany my series of blog posts, which introduce key public policy concepts and theories in 1,000 words. This one is on multiple streams analysis, or often called multiple streams approach, MSA. And I'd recommend you listen to the posts on framing and power of ideas, and then after this one, listen to the one on evolution. Now, in this case, we have two key starting points. The first is John Kingdon, who started up multiple streams, adapted the so-called garbage can model of organisational policymaking to challenge this notion that we've come across before about a linear set of stages that we associate with concepts like comprehensive rationality and the policy cycle. And there are three main stages there you might identify. So you start off with, a policymaker identifying their values, attaching them to particular problems that they want to pay attention to. Then a neutral bureaucracy generates a large number of possible solutions to that problem. And then the policymakers choose the best one. Three stages in that order. Instead, what the garbage can model suggests is that this process can happen in any order. And note this great phrase, solutions chasing problems. And they also talk about, people looking for work, looking to make choices without really knowing what their priorities are. Now, Kingdon uses the metaphor of streams. There are three separate streams in that process that represent each of those stages. Then you have a second starting point, which is Kingdon challenging the phrase associated with an idea whose time has come, which tends to highlight the inevitability of policy change. When some ideas seem to have popped up and had a great impact on public policy. Now, in that case, bear in mind, so the word idea means a few things, but in this case, it means, I have an idea or I have a policy solution. So we're talking about a policy solution whose time seems to have come. And it often seems to come after a major lurch of attention to a problem. Now, what Kingdon says instead is that if policy is to change as markedly as that phrase suggests, then these three streams have to come together at the same time during another metaphor that he introduces, this window of opportunity. So he talks about these three streams. The first is the problem stream. So there has to be a lurch of attention, government attention, policy, public media attention, but in this case, policymaker attention to a particular problem. Then there's a policy stream. So there has to be a solution to that problem already available. The third stream is a politics stream. So policymakers, key policymakers, must have the motive and opportunity to turn that solution into policy. Now, that allows us to think through each of these requirements in some depth and think, what would have to happen for each of these streams to be ready to, to couple with each other. Now, if you think the problem stream, if you look at the, studies of agenda setting, or if you look at the post I've done on your framing or power, this idea of attention to a problem is that there's no real, there's no close relationship between any notional, objectively important problem and attention to it. Instead, this is a process in which people or actors exercise power to try and get their preferred problems at the top of a political agenda. Okay, so that is not inevitable. And, attention tends to rise and fall very quickly. So these are two things that would suggest that this is not an inevitable process, that there may not be significant attention to this problem, and it may not last for a particular long period of time. Then you have the policy stream. Now, this is possibly the non-intuitive part of this process. So it suggests that people have to have come up with a solution to a problem that does not yet seem to exist or doesn't receive enough attention. Now, the point there, which links closely to the evolutionary discussion we can have in a different post, is that he discusses this idea that within a policy community, broadly defined, a network of important actors, a solution has to be acceptable to a sufficient number of you know, key people within that community. So he describes this in a sort of evolutionary metaphor, it kind of mutating and emerging from a, you know, policy primeval soup as it sort of changes to become feasible. And he discusses two different kinds of feasibility. One is that it's technically feasible. So enough people have commented on, you know, the extent to which it would work as intended when delivered. And it also has to be politically feasible. You know, it has to be something that will be accepted by a sufficient number of relevant people within the, you know, the community or the wider population. Then there's the politics stream. So that, you know, something has to happen for policymakers to have the motive and opportunity. So this can be a kind of routine event, like, you know, a new government, you know, new policymakers come in with new motive, or it can be what he describes as a shift in the national mood, which makes you know, policy change conducive, or it could be something to do with the strategies of your successful strategies of interest groups. Now, in each case, again, it's not inevitable that there'll be enough motive and opportunity. So if you imagine you have three pretty important requirements in each stream, and all of those streams have to come together at a particular time. So you imagine that takes us very far from the starting point of a linear policy process in which, you know, the change seems inevitable when policymakers pay attention. Or this other idea of an idea whose time has come, when there's been a lurch of attention, something's going to happen. Well, that this multiple streams challenges both of those starting points. Okay, so yeah, so far so good, and a kind of nice and reasonably easy to explain and understand concept there. It's a simple metaphor to describe an important policy process. Now, I think that is part of the reason why multiple streams really took off within the public policy literature. And there have been hundreds of applications in the past 3 decades. In fact, you know, at least 300 significant applications in the past dozen years or so. And you can pick up that in an article that was, the lead author is Michael Jones, which I'll mention at the end of the pod. So it importantly, it began in the US, but then really took off. So, and you know, not only the US, but this was a US political system at the federal level in the 80s, and Kingdon looked at health and transportation. Now it's really, you know, it's been applied to all sorts of areas. Now, part of its appeal, apart from, you know, the flexibility of the metaphor, is that so many of its relevant concepts are abstract enough to be, you know, what I would call universal, which is they seem to apply at any place, any time, any place, anywhere. Okay, so think of these concepts. Now, the first one is he talks about ambiguity. You know, there are many ways to frame any policy problem, and, you know, people compete to decide which image, you know, should be dominant. There's competition for policymaker attention. Few problems reach the top of the agenda. There's an imperfect selection process. That's what Zahari Adis talks about, an imperfect selection process in which new information is very difficult to gather and it's subject to manipulation. Then policymakers have limited time, which forces them to make choices before their preferences are clear. Now, in each of those four cases, we're talking about, as usual, the implications of bounded rationality. You know, bounded rationality in policymakers produces uncertainty, ambiguity, competition for attention, and they need to make decisions despite these limitations. Then you have this departure that we talked about from comprehensive rationality, departure from a linear decision-making process. Now, you can identify that departure in, you know, in all political systems. Then perhaps, you know, the final concept that seems universal is this idea of softening. As some issues take time, or some solutions take time to become accepted within governments or networks. But bear that one, last one in mind. Now, where do we go from here? Well, I would say read up on or listen up on evolutionary theory to hear about, for example, the comparison with punctuated equilibrium theory, which has different ideas about how likely policy is to change. And in that case, you would note the importance of the role of venue shift, which reduces the need to soften ideas within one community because you can gain a different audience in another. And actually, that point is reinforced by Peter Hall when he talks about paradigm shift, because there you're talking about, you know, a completely new set of ideas, or policymakers relying on a completely new set of actors. So no need to soften to satisfy existing actors. Now, the second thing to do is follow up how multiple streams has changed when it's been applied outside the US or outside the US federal level. So I'll give you some examples. In smaller areas, it seems that the same people are involved. So part of the reason that Kingdon separated these three streams is that different actors seem to be involved in different stages. So for example, in the US, the president would raise issues, and that's the problem stream. The bureaucracy would try and solve problems. That's the solution stream. And, you know, lots of different actors could be involved, so there's the public with the national mood, or different actors who have to be receptive to particular solutions. Then in smaller areas, it seems that you can have the same actors involved at each stage. And so, you know, that has implications about the need for these three streams to come together at the same time. And there's also, if you look into, there's a study, for example, by Dudley on London, which suggests that, you know, an entrepreneur can have a much bigger effect at a smaller level. You know, they talk about, I mean, the metaphor doesn't always work, but bringing together these three streams together can seem much easier in a smaller, you know, single area than in a US federal system. Then you have studies of subnational arenas or national arenas within a supranational context. So think of, you know, member states of the EU, in which solutions can come from the outside. So a lot of the assumption behind Kingdon was that these solutions had to be processed within a community at a federal level. Well, in subnational arenas, ideas can come from the federal level. In supranational arenas, you know, the ideas that countries accept might come from a body at a different level. Then you have these studies of the European Union, in which there's an important discussion about a further aspect of ambiguity, which is, you know, who is in charge, you know, which level or type of government takes the lead here. And that produces, you know, interacts with ambiguity about the meaning of policy. So it's, you know, it's worth following up. And finally, the thing that I find most interesting is when you start to try and apply policy theories that seem universal, but are very different when they're applied outside of, the West or countries like the US. So there's a great study by Tsu on China, which says that, you know, for any major policy event or change to happen, a solution has to be technically infeasible. You know, that's the only way in which you'll get it processed outside of the normal channels. And that's really worth following up as a great example of what happens when you apply these theories outside of the area in which they're originally intended. So the concept itself or some of its parts seem universal, but there are important territorial aspects when applied to case studies in different places. And in fact, I describe that point in much more depth in a separate post and podcast on case study comparative research, which you can find on my website as well. You can also get a good sense of the literature from a special issue of the Policy Studies Journal, which came out in early 2016. So that includes my article, which goes into some of these issues, co-authored with Michael Jones, and an article in which the lead author was Michael Jones. So there are very many authors on that one, which goes through those 300 studies of multiple streams and picks up on the extent to which it's a, you know, it's a coherent literature in which everyone's talking to each other. Now, I've got some views on the extent to which this literature, you know, has produced a large number of comparable studies, but I won't tell you about that just now. You'll have to chase that up in the comparative research podcast. Okay, thank you.